You gotta respect a white person working at a Black History Museum. You gotta respect that. That was a choice. He white, he could work anywhere. He chose a Black History Museum. You know that job interview was a son of a How many extra questions did he have to answer? Because you black and old, it ain't shit to work at a Civil Rights Museum. You just walk in, that's me on the picture. What you filling out paperwork for? You on the wall. But if you white, you know, they grilling that dude. Asking him all kinds of questions. They had nothing to do with Black history, all in that dude's face. Paperwork looks good, everything checks out. Real quick, at what temperature do you deep fry catfish?
Our guest in this hour is the comedian, the brilliant comedian, Roy Wood Jr. He's back with his take on the 2024 election, his departure from The Daily Show, and most importantly, his Happy to Be Here tour. We'll give you dates and talk about that and pretty much whatever Roy Wood Jr. wants to talk about. That's how it usually works when he's on this program. Roy Wood Jr., how are you, sir?
How you doing, man? How you been?
Man, I'm good. If I complained, I'd be an ingrate. I am doing remarkably well, and I'm always always delighted to be in conversation with you. Let me just do this. I'm going to jump right in because I want to make the most of this hour with you, and I'm delighted to have an hour with you, Roy Wood Jr. Thank you for your time, sir. When you were last on, you were telling me about your father, and I must confess to you on national radio here that I started researching and learning more about your father because I was fascinated by what you did tell me, albeit briefly, in our last conversation. Why am I coming back to that? Because we talked in our last hour about breaking news that Bibi Netanyahu, prime minister in Israel, of course, has announced he's shutting down Al Jazeera. The government there has given him the authority to do so. And I'm troubled by this because in any conflict, in any sort of contestation, you know the old adage, the truth is always the first casualty. And I'm troubled by the fact that a news organization that they have labeled the mouthpiece of Hamas, that's their right, if that's their privilege, if that's how they see it. But it's a news organization. It's a credible news organization. And they've announced they're shutting down Al Jazeera from reporting inside of Iraq. And so my heart is a bit vexed today when I see any nation state shutting down a free press. That's a problem for me. That's not what I want you to comment on unless you want to. That's not really my point. My point is what got me thinking about why I wanted to start talking about your father is the role that your father played in his career. And so I wonder if you just, my sense is that if you know the backstory to people, namely about their mama and their daddy, you understand them better. So tell me more and tell the audience more about your father and the role that he played.
I mean, my father was a radio journalist at a time where he was essentially the first black person in most of the newsrooms he was hired in. Mm-hmm. And so when you talk about, and like if we're talking about conflict in the same sense of, you know, Israel and Palestine, you know, my father covered the riots in South Africa in Soweto in the 50s. Mm-hmm. My father covered the civil war in Rhodesia, which eventually became Zimbabwe. Like, this is, we're talking journalists getting shot at. Like, you think the press was getting murdered and captured now, mm-hmm. you know, just as crazy back then. You know, we're also talking about Vietnam. And I've always joked that, you know, anywhere where black people was getting shot at, my daddy done pulled up. No matter. With a tape recorder, not a gun.
With a tape recorder, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, they shoot that black folk? All right, let me get on the plane. Go see what's happening.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and no different with the civil rights movement. You know, from Ruby Bridges up until my father passed in 95, he's mm-hmm. always cared for, you know, a lot of heinous things and tried to hold up a mirror to the country. I've had the gift of being able to do it in a more funny way.
Yeah.
And it's something I actually kind of backdoored into. But, you know, he's always, you know, thought about the press. And that was the thing that, you know, aside from the jokes last year at the Correspondents' Dinner, that I was trying to talk about the importance of not just, you know, the press, but minority press and black press and the fact that they have the most to show, so they're going to be the first to go. They're going to be the first ones that are going to be put out to pasture local reporters and, you know, the death of Vice News as well, I think, you know, which is, I think, very sad as well. When we talk about objective journalism, that's as big a casualty, in my opinion, as Al Jazeera. Mm-hmm. Which comes on the heels of Al Jazeera America shutting down, I think it was about 3 years ago.
Yep. Hold that point. Just getting started here with Roy Wood Jr. Whenever you talk to Roy Wood Jr., which I enjoy doing, he's going to make you laugh, no question about that. He's on tour right now. They're happy to be here, too. We'll talk about that. So we'll get our laughs in. But he's also a thoughtful person. And my sense is, this is just me talking, already subjective, the best comedians for me are those who come from a thoughtful approach. They're thinking about the world. They're seeing the world. They see it through a funny lens, and yet they're challenging us through their comedy to consider another point of view. And that's what I love about the work, and I would call it witness. You call it comedy, of Roy Wood Jr. I'm glad I've gotten for the hour. You're listening to Tavis Smiley.
Hope, agency, dignity. This is Tavis Smiley.
Can you dig it?
Come on!
Let's get back to more of this rich dialogue with Tavis Smiley.
Tavis Smiley and comedian Roy Wood Jr., who is traveling the country right now and is happy to be here tour. We'll share some dates with you where you can see Roy Wood Jr. I'm excited. He's coming to L.A. for two nights, so I can't wait to check him out when he comes this way, comes to the West Coast for a couple of days. So I'm excited about that. So, again, I'll share those dates with you as we move through this hour, but I'm just delighted to be in conversation with Roy Wood Jr. Roy, I want to play some sound from your White House correspondent's turn hosting. We'll do that in just a second here, but I want to just finish this train of thought about your father. And so your father is a journalist. He's traveling the world, as you said earlier, as you joked earlier. Wherever black folk were being shot at, he showed up, not with a gun, but with a tape recorder. And we were thankful and grateful to him for covering these stories that many of us have read and didn't know it was your father who was actually doing the reporting. But as a comedian, how does that shape what you do? I mean, as I believe that all of us are the sum total of our life's experiences. And so you may be a comedian, your father may have been a journalist, but you'll never convince me that some of him didn't get inside of you and what we see on stage.
Oh, I'm not going to deny that. I mean, you grow up around it. I grew up in a news house, man. Like, we read the paper every day. We watched on Sunday mornings. I was probably the only kid in middle school with a favorite news anchor. You know?
Just because I'm curious, who was that?
Everybody talking about Bo Jackson and all of that stuff, man. I'm like, look, man, I'm telling y'all right now, Fred Hickman on CNN Sports, that's the dude. You know, like, those are the people that I enjoy, you know. But I was definitely growing up watching, you know, the sports reporters and CBS Sunday Mornings, Charles Kuralt, 60 Minutes, the whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
So that part of it always stuck with me. When I got my learner's permit, I'd say the thing that probably influenced me the most, to your point, when I turned 15, the year before my father died, and he was starting to get a little weaker with cancer, but he was still doing speaking engagements. He still had radio gigs. So I kind of became his driver for the last year of his life. So I drove my pops to all his speaking engagements, and that was the first time really watching him talk and orate and parlay. And this is the same man who took me backstage when Jesse Jackson was running in 84.
Mm.
And so my dad knew everybody. Anybody that came to town, he'd take them out to eat, and I was the driver. I just got to sit and watch him talk about blackness and talk about the state of this country and what it means for black people. It did not stick until I got in my 30s, though. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that's very interesting, is that we can strive to not be our parents. You know, I don't want to talk about this stuff. But when I started doing morning radio, and I wanted to do radio to be the next Ricky Smiley. Ricky Smiley's my comedy and radio OG, also from Birmingham.
Mm-hmm.
When Ricky left the station that I started at, we were a community station. We still are. So with 95.7, you can crack all the jokes you want as a comic on the show, but you're going to go do this toy drive. So-and-so's house just burnt down. So we're going to stand in front of this house, and we're going to solicit donations all morning. So you start seeing the people that are affected by the problems that politicians don't change. And so seeing that up close for a decade through the lens of hip-hop, it changed what I cared to talk about on stage.
Yeah.
And then that's when I kind of turned into what eventually The Daily Show wanted to hire.
We'll talk about that when we come forward here. It is no stretch. This is why I love these. I love having these in-depth conversations. You can have your sound bites all you want, but that ain't what we do here. We do 3 hours a day, and this is why we do it. It allows us to go a little bit deeper, and you understand better the backstory to the people that you love. I mean, we all love Roy Wood Jr. He makes us laugh all the time, but now I think you understand a bit more about why and how he does what he does because you hear more about his backstory. And so that it really is not, it's not really a stretch to imagine Roy being on The Daily Show when you understand his backstory. Here's my question before I play some sound from your turn at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. My lead-in question is simply this. What would your father have made of his boy being asked to be the featured comic, the featured comedian at the White House Correspondents' Dinner last year? Roy, can you hear me? Did I lose you? I hope I didn't lose you. Roy Wood Jr. Is that mute button pass? There you are. There you are. Okay. You heard my question. I'm sorry. We had a technical problem. You're back now. What would your father have thought of you hosting the featured comic last year at the White House Correspondents' Dinner?
My dad would have said, you need to go up there and cuss some white folks out and leave them jokes at home. My dad was not a humorous person. We watched Sinbad one night at the house.
Yeah.
He ain't laughed once. And then he just got up and went, that's a real brother right there. I bet him once on the struggle march. Like, the extent of my father's respect for Sinbad started and ended with, he cares about black people. But he didn't laugh.
Yeah.
Like, Dick Gregory came over to the house once, and he's like, just playing. Dick, here's how we got to handle the stuff, and I don't want to hear nothing about no bohemian milkshake. We got to talk about the issue. I don't know if my pops would have been cool with it, you know, right away, but I think an opportunity to be in that room, and there were so many people in that room who worked with my father during his days at the National Black Network, which was, you know, my father was one of the founding members of that black news organization in the 70s at WVON in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
So many people that my father hired or worked with are still alive and breathing. And I think them being in that room and me being able to speak in front of them would have meant the world to him. But also, make sure you cuss out the president.
You are,
my daddy ain't like no president.
you ain't
like none of.
I'm laughing because although this is serious, you are being heard right now on WVON in Chicago. This program is syndicated there, and I just love the shout out to I always love VON, the voice of the Negro, and your daddy was there way back when. So mad love to the city of Chicago and WVON.
Yeah, they got old. Of my pops, I got to swing by. I'm in Chicago later on in June, and I'm gonna go by the station. They've reached out. They've shown me nothing but love since the Correspondents' Dinner in Chicago, and the legacy my father helped build up there, man. You know, my daddy hired Don Cornelius, right?
I did not know this. Okay, now you tell me stuff I didn't know. Okay, tell me this story. Tell me this story.
Well, my pops, and they show, and I got to give a shout out to BET because they showed this scene in American Soul. On when they had the show about Don Cornelius' life. Don Cornelius was a cop. He pulled my daddy over. My daddy said, you got a deep voice. Hit me when you get a job, when you need a job. And when you need a real job. And he still gave my daddy the ticket.
And hey, Roy, this is a true story?
This is 1,000% true.
Wow.
It was in the show, and the show was cooperated by Don Cornelius' heirs.
So Don Cornelius was a cop. He pulls your dad over, and your dad told him that?
You got a deep voice. You need to come work at WVON. And I don't know if that'll get you out of a ticket today, but it did back then. And Don got into media, and I'm not going to act like my father was like every idea Don Cornelius ever came up with, but the idea of, hey, stop doing this. Come over here and do this, was my father. My father had a chance to buy into Soul Train. Up front, told Don Cornelius, and I quote, don't nobody want to see black folks dance for an hour. We in the struggle. My daddy couldn't have been more wrong. Was bitter. It's the only thing, and I think that's why my daddy couldn't laugh, was because he was bitter about Soul Train. I couldn't watch Soul Train at the house growing up. Turn that bucket off.
I would love, to have actually met your father. His father's protestations notwithstanding, his boy, Roy Wood Jr., did headline the White House Correspondents' Dinner last year. His father, as Roy said earlier, would have told him, leave them jokes alone and go cuss them white people out. He didn't quite cuss the white folk out, but he got his point across here. Now, a couple of minutes of his 20-minute set, I think. I mean, he got a couple minutes here. Roy Wood Jr. Featured last year at the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Happy to be here. Oh, real quick, Mr. President, I think you left some of your classified documents up here. You can get to them. Yeah. Yeah, no, don't give them to him. I'll put them in a safe place. He don't know where to keep them. Scandals have been devouring careers this year. The untouchable Tucker Carlson is out of a job. Yeah. Okay. Some people celebrate it. But to Tucker's staff, I want you to know that I know what you're feeling. I work at The Daily Show, so I too have been blindsided by the sudden departure of the host of a fake news program. The easiest scandal to follow was the Trump document scandal. That was the one that was easy to follow. It was simple. It's some stuff that's supposed to be in the White House that ain't. And the media, y'all did y'all's job. Y'all jumped on that story. As soon as the Trump document story broke, everybody was down in Mar-a-Lago. We're reporting live from the documents, and we're gonna find them. And then we found out Joe Biden had documents too, and it was like, oh, it's not a big deal. It's not a big deal. Everybody got documents. Mike Pence has some documents. Who cares about it? Ooh, look, a Chinese spy balloon. Would you look at that? Ooh. There's been no scandal more damaging than the scandal of, is Joe Biden awake? Look, hey, say what you want about our president, but when he wake up from that nap, work gets done. He might doze off with an infrastructure bill. student loan forgiveness. Did we free Brittany Griner or free Brittany Griner? But the industry that covers all of these scandals isn't immune to them theirself. The issue with good media is that most people can't afford that. All the essential, fair, and nuanced reporting, it's all stuck behind a paywall. People can't afford rent. People can't afford food, not healthy food. They can't afford an education. They damn sure can't afford to pay for the truth. But you all can't afford to go find the truth for free. The work you do as journalists is important. It's essential. It's dangerous. You hear about all these newsrooms getting cuts. That's every article that Tamara has been sending me the last 2 months. It's just the newsroom is getting cut. We're cutting people. We're cutting budgets. But you never hear about the multi-million dollar executives reducing their salaries within these organizations. Now, how do we fix this? I don't know. I'm a comedian. I was just up here.
Roy Wood Jr., I must tell you, man, I've seen a number of these White House Correspondents' Dinners over the course of my career. I've been in that room on a number of occasions watching it live, and I've seen some people bomb and tank, and I've seen others who I thought were absolutely brilliant. And I thought your turn last year was brilliant, and I wanted to play some highlights because I wanted people to hear the range of your approach and your appeal. You got your jokes in. But you made some strong statements there at the end. I'll talk about that in a moment, the stuff you said at the end about the media. Before I do that, though, what is it like? I will never have this experience. Thank God for Jesus. But what is it like to be roasting the president while he's sitting so close you could slap him if you wanted to, spit on him? He's that close to you, but you are roasting him. What's that feel like?
He ain't gonna fight me. So, you know, the worst that can happen is that y'all gonna be mad and then y'all gonna put me up for a tax audit every year for the next 5 years. And I've been audited 3 times in the last 20. There's nothing left. I've been booed at the Apollo. I'm good. I'll be fine. Yeah. So, you know, the idea of still having to go back and look at his eyes, it wasn't Joe Biden I was worried about. It was Kamala. That was what I was worried about. I was like, I ain't gonna do right by this black woman, but I got to point out one or two things, but still do right by her ultimately. I hope she gets these jokes. And thankfully she did. And she understood where I was coming from in the joke. Because the whole thing about Kamala was just, you know, this idea that people are asking questions about what does she do.
And that's a question we've never asked of any vice president.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then even if she has done stuff, the stuff she has done, we ain't talking about it because she's a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't talk about that. And so, like, it's using sexism, whatever. That was, that run was probably the only part where I'm like, man, I hope people don't twist this.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing with humor now. People can take jokes and assign intent.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very dangerous space for a comedian to exist in, but we assume you were trying to weaponize something. And it's just, no, I was just making a joke.
I want to talk about that part, as we say, when we come forward. That's a powerful point that I think deserves some interrogation, people assign intent to your jokes. More than a few comedians, Dave Chappelle, more than a few comedians have gotten in trouble for that. People assigning intent to their jokes. We'll talk about that part when we come forward. As I mentioned a moment ago, I want to talk about that last part. I'm just curious. I could be out in left field. I don't know. But when Roy was talking to that room about the importance of journalism and the work that they do, I'm just curious as to whether his father was anywhere on his shoulder or anywhere in the back of his mind, anywhere in his thought process. Again, his father passes away in 1995. He doesn't live long to see Roy Wood Jr., his son, be honored as the featured stand-up at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Doesn't get much better than that. And so I'm just curious whether or not his daddy was on his mind in any way. We'll talk about The Daily Show. We'll talk about his tour. Happy to be here. A lot more ground to cover with Roy Wood Jr. when we come forward on Tavis Smiley.
What's your quarrel with the world? You're listening to Tavis Smiley.
Paid for by government.com.
Sounds different, huh? This is Tavis Smiley.
This is Tavis Smiley continuing his conversation with the brilliant comedian Roy Wood Jr., who I'm honored to have on in this hour. Some dates where you can see the Happy to Be Here tour featuring Run Roy Wood Jr. On the 18th of April, he's in Dallas, Texas. On the 19th, he's in Austin, Texas. On the 21st, he's in Houston. On the 3rd of May, he's in Portland, Oregon. On the 5th and on the 4th of, I should say on the 4th of May, I got it circled on my calendar. He's here in L.A. For two shows on the 4th. So I got that on, again, my calendar already circled in red four or five times. He's here in L.A. again on the 4th of May. On the 11th of May, he's in Tampa. And then in June, he is in St. Louis on the 21st, and on the 22nd, his appearance in the aforementioned city of Chicago. Chicago on the 22nd of June. There are just some of the dates. There are others, but there are just some I can share with you right quick for where you can catch the Happy to Be Here tour with Roy Wood Jr. I'll remind you of that before we close this conversation at the top of the hour, but I just want to get that to you now, as promised. Roy Wood Jr., back to that White House correspondence appearance last year and the end part where you stop with the jokey jokes and you spoke I thought rather transparently, rather forthrightly to that audience of journalists. Look back, if you will, on that moment and what you were intending to get across, and just curious as to whether or not in that moment at least your father was on your shoulder.
Yeah, I'd say so, which is why I had to give him a shout out and mention him, you know, my mom as well, who was in the room, you know, on that night. I don't think that regardless of what you set out to be, you just have to respect what you become, and what I've become to some degree is a version of what he did and what he stands for.
Mm-hmm.
So I think because of that, you gotta mention that. You know, the main thing I wanted to mention in that room was just the importance of real reporting and how that is being underfunded and taken away, much like what you said at the top of the hour about Al Jazeera being shut down by Israel. Like,
mm-hmm.
The idea that we're having journalists have to fight and claw, especially in America, all these state and local stories and state and local politics is where all of the real BS, to me, happens. Those stories no longer have people covering those communities. I'm from a state that no longer has a printed newspaper in any market.
Mm.
Birmingham, Montgomery, Mobile, all of it. It's all AL.com now.
Mm.
So if there's less papers, there's less reporters, there's less people to cover and really dig up and look under those rocks where all of the nonsense is happening. Was it Oklahoma last year where the reporter left a recorder in the room and found out half the city council was plotting to do something crazy?
Yeah, I think that was Oklahoma.
Yeah, it was just an accident. Whoops, my bad. And then you go back and listen to the tape, like, we got to kill one of these reporters. It was like, what? But that's what you need. You need watchdogs. You need supervisors. You need people over the shoulder. And you know, DE&I and everything that's happening now and the death of it and the erosion of it and the repurposing of it, I think is something that I never would have thought would have gotten this wild. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's definitely going that way.
Yeah. Just because I'm curious, your mama was in the room that night. Can you share with me what your mother said about your performance? I'm just curious.
My mom, you know, she's English and everything, you know. You said and ah, and I think, and I don't remember where, but somewhere in that speech, I must have said shoal instead of sure. Like, shoal ain't, or sh-. And I'm like, my jokes, it has to have a slanguage to it. It has to have a rhythm. Mm-hmm. Jokes have a different rhythm from an orator, not tastemakers. Like, but also good job. You know, mm-hmm. Very good. You know, that my mom is all about banquet stuff. I believe my mom was more proud of that than anything else I've done professionally.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we all live to make our mamas proud. Every black man I know wants to make his mama proud, including yours truly. So that ain't the worst thing if your mama said you did a good job, Roy.
Yeah, it was okay, but it's too many sentence fragments. It's like, thanks.
Well, but
also 4 years of higher education. So what do you expect?
Yeah, she could have. Well, it could have been worse. You could have been, you know, splitting verbs and busted infinitives and dangling participles. At least you weren't doing all that, man. It could have been worse.
Yeah.
But I digress on that. Let me talk about The Daily Show. Of course, since I last talked to you, news on The Daily Show, Jon Stewart is back at least, what, one night a week on Mondays, I think? I haven't had a chance to see him yet.
Yeah, Jon's Mondays, and they got the other correspondents guest hosting the rest of the week.
Yeah, look back on your time on The Daily Show, but also tell me what you think of this new iteration of The Daily Show now that Jon is back at least on Mondays.
I think it's great. When I left, that wasn't in the discussion. You know, I left in October. Jon, everything with that was announced. I think late January, top of, you know, somewhere in February or whatever. Mm-hmm. That it's a great situation just to have somebody in the driver's seat driving conversation of what I think is a very pivotal election year. You know, the show won an Emmy this year.
Mm-hmm.
And what people get is that, you know, that Emmy honors literally 6 months of Trevor Noah and 6 months without Trevor Noah.
Mm-hmm.
So 6 months of guest hosts and the team and the producers, if they were able to do that without a permanent host and a permanent plan, then I can only imagine what they're going to be able to do this year with Jon Stewart's brilliance, you know, back in the building. And it's all love, you know. That's the thing that I think we forget is that sometimes you can just make a decision where something doesn't work right for you, mm-hmm. and you can leave, mm-hmm. and it's okay. Mm-hmm. And it ain't beef. It ain't I hate y'all. And it ain't I'm sick. Well, I did take a bunch of stuff from my office. You can steal some stuff, but it's paramount. They got it. I know you got it on you. Byron Allen just offered $30 billion to buy you today. So I know you got some money. So, yes, I took some coffee mugs, Tavis.
Yeah. What do you make of the I think this is the right word. I don't want to overstate it, Roy Wood Jr., but what do you make of the power of media, even in a comedic setting, to really press the conversation, to advance the narrative, to embarrass people, to shame people, but ultimately to lead to certain outcomes? It is fundamentally amazing to me that media, as fragmented as it is these days, still in certain spaces and places is pregnant with that kind of power, man.
Yeah, I think humor as a weapon for embarrassing has eroded some, though. I think that sword has become a little dull, mm-hmm. because you can only be shamed by people whose opinions you respect.
Mm-hmm.
And now, mm-hmm. the silo where if I don't even respect you, I don't care that you don't agree with my policy or my thing. So now nobody's really even listening to reason from the other side. And that's why a candidate like Donald Trump is unembarrassable. Mm-hmm. Same with Marjorie Taylor Greene, or I would even throw George Santos, you know, up until the time that he chose to leave in there. And Santos didn't leave because he was embarrassed. Santos was leaving because he got caught telling lies and, you know, you messed up with the church's money. And that's bad for the Republicans. Mm-hmm. You're bad for the party, fiscally speaking. It wasn't about his political leans and the things that he was going to vote on, because most of what he was voting on was in alignment with Republican ideals.
Yeah.
So you almost have to find a new way to get people up out of the box, because just going, hey, you're a dummy and we're all going to laugh at you, isn't enough.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
No, I receive that. I hear that. And I couldn't concur more with the sentiment. When we come forward, I want to get back to what Roy said moments ago, I should say, that I haven't had a chance to interrogate as yet. And that is this notion of what happens in a moment where the jokes that comedians deliver get twisted. And what happens when we assign intent to the jokes that they tell? But another way, what happens when we take this stuff way too seriously? They are comedians, after all. We'll talk about that part with Roy Wood Jr. when we come forward on Tavis Smiley.
Interrogating and unpacking. That's what we do around here. You're listening to Tavis Smiley. Smiley. Ready to re-examine your assumptions and expand your inventory of ideas? More of Tavis Smiley coming your way right now.
So, Roy Wood Jr., what is the danger in real time when we twist the jokes that you and others tell, when we assign, as you put it, intent to what you're saying from the stage? What's the danger in that?
I think that when you assume intent, then you are attempting to dictate how a comedian was trying to approach a topic.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we can definitely say how a joke lands. That's fair. You can say, like you mentioned Chappelle before the break. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You can say that Chappelle's joke hurt some people and it made this community feel a certain way. And as a member of the community that was joked about, I don't like it. Cool. But if you say that Chappelle, for sure, that was the target he was in, that was his goal with that joke, then I think we're getting into presumptions of intent. Now, if a comedian chooses to do that after that, knowing that, A, if I do this joke like this, certain people are going to take it a certain kind of way, and they still do it without regarding that community, I understand where the accusations can get levied, not just at Chappelle, but any comic that's doing something that's pissing off a group.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fine. But the idea that you are doing this solely for that goal and objective, that part I don't buy into. And, you know, even with my correspondence dinner, every single group, every single interest, every single entity that has some sort of political leaning took a piece of my correspondence dinner and used it to forward their agenda.
Mm-hmm.
So you would think, the naked eye, by just looking at one or two of my jokes, if you're a member of that particular site, you would think that I'm on the square with you on all things political. Fox News took a bit and used it to bash Biden. Same way CNN took a bit and used it to bash Tucker Carlson.
Yeah.
The E! Network took a bit to promote something. 50 Cent took a clip to promote, because I mentioned Power and BMF, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying is that everybody's going to take apart what you do and figure out a way to make it work for them to influence the things that they care about. And it could be something as simple as Vanderpump Rules on E!, or it could be BMF, or it could be me talking about school shootings and gun reform. So I think that's the thing that, as a comedian, it concerns me. But what I also learned from the correspondence dinner is there's literally nothing I could do about it. There's nothing I could do to keep somebody from taking 15 seconds of what I said and making me look like I straight up don't like Biden.
Yeah,
or vice versa. You know, like, there's nothing I can do about that.
There are some who believe, and I want to get Roy Wood's take on this, Roy Wood Jr.'s take on this when we come forward in our remaining moments here, just a second. There are some who believe, given what Roy's saying right now, and others have said things similar to me on this program in recent months, there are those who believe that comedy right now is in a dark place. That comedy is in a very dark space. I wonder if Roy Wood Jr. believes that. We'll talk about that part when we come forward in our remaining moments with Roy Wood Jr. on Tavis Smiley.
For all the freedom-loving folk, This is Tavis Smiley.
I feel like freedom.
Who do you trust to get at the truth?
Tavis Smiley.
That's who. The conversation continues right now.
Roy Wood Jr. was talking moments ago about how persons use his words to advance their own causes, but Roy Wood Jr. speaks for himself, and so does his philanthropy in his hometown of Birmingham, which he mentioned earlier in this program. His philanthropic endeavors are well known. He supported all kinds of work, including Workshops, Inc., which enriches the lives of those people helping with people with disabilities. The Dubs Baseball Academy helps to change lives. He supported that. Stair Birmingham, tutoring students to read better and dream bigger. Also, I See Me, Inc., whose mission is to dismantle the school-to-prison pipeline. This brother is putting his money where his mouth is and supporting a lot of important causes. I recall that Rory raised a lot of money for displaced comedy staffs at the height of the pandemic through a number of platforms, including Laugh Aid and TipYourWaitStaff.com. So I just celebrate Roy Wood Jr., not just for his comedy, for his artistic genius, but also for the work he's doing to empower and enhance the lives of other fellow citizens. Roy Wood Jr. is on the road right now with his Happy to Be Here tour. Again, Thursday, the 18th of April, Dallas, Texas, the 19th, Austin, the 21st, Houston, into May, on the 3rd, Portland, the 4th, here in L.A., the 11th, Tampa, Florida, the 21st in St. Louis, and on the 22nd of June, actually those last two dates are June, the 21st of June, St. Louis, and the 22nd of June, Chicago. There's some dates to catch Roy Wood Jr. on the road. I've got 2 minutes left, Roy Wood Jr. I will give it to you. Is comedy in a dark place, sir?
No, I think comedy is still growing. The people who love it are finding it. People are still going out in droves to watch live comedy, and that's what keeps the essence of what we do alive. We're just in a time period where people have the opportunity to voice their opinions more, faster, and quicker. And so there are more people that may not like a particular comedian, so you're just hearing about it more.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the comedians that you're hearing about that people don't like, they are still on the road. They are still selling tickets. And to me, that's what freedom looks like.
Yeah.
That's what freedom is supposed to be. So, you know, I'm thankful for the people that come out to see me. I just think it's the thing we have to make sure comedians understand is that freedom of speech ain't freedom from consequence. You got the freedom to go out on the block and say what you want to say.
Yeah.
But you may not even have the freedom of the same buildings to say what you want to say because other people may not be with it. And that's free market. And that's something else that also must be celebrated. And, you know, you can't have freedom of speech and then go, but you can't have free market. Yes, you can.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't like you, I might not hire you. Mm-hmm. I might not have you on my network. But that doesn't keep you from going out somewhere in this country and telling a joke. The laughs ain't dead. Go see me. If not me, if you don't like me, go see somebody else you like.
I love comedians who make me laugh, obviously, but I really love comedians who have a usable intellect. And Roy Wood Jr. is one of those persons on my short list. Roy, always, sir, a delight to talk to you. Thank you for the time. Have a great rest of the tour, and I'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Thank you.
Stay
see
strong.
You in May.
All right, brothers. I'll see you in May. More of Tavis Smiley when we come forward.